From KCLU Public Radio, this is Crosstalk.
The number to call is 805-493-9200. 493-9200.
Good afternoon. Dr. Barton Goldsmith here, along with my co-host for the day, Dr. Stephen Trudeau.
Hey, Barton, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, I'm coughing and sneezing a little bit from the smoke, but doing all right.
It's pretty bad out there. Scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, they're not letting the kids go play out at recess. They're kind of keeping them indoors right now and advising people with respiratory problems to stay indoors. And
if you don't want respiratory problems, stay indoors.
Yeah, breathe your Perrier.
That's cute. You know, though with all of this, with everything going on, I think it helps us focus on what we need to appreciate. And in that light, we have a great guest today. We have Mike Robbins, a former professional baseball player, pitcher with the Kansas City Royals, who had his career cut tragically short by an injury and then figured out his way to make an incredible life for himself and has just come out with a great new book called Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming.
You guys doing okay with the fires and everything down there?
Nothing singed yet.
Well, that's good news.
I'm sure there are quite a few people who are struggling, but, you know, we have a lot of experience with it down here, and we have great people that we get to work with, so we're doing the best we can.
And our local fire departments are absolutely amazing. They really are heroes.
Yeah.
Done a lot for the community. And you seem to be doing quite a lot for the world in your case.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and, you know, it's, with something scary going on down in Southern California, like fires, it actually, you mentioned it just as we were kind of leading into this, you know, oftentimes something really bad happening, one of the silver linings is that it does force us, you know, whether we want to or not, to pay attention to all the good things in our lives when we're fortunate enough not to be in harm's way, so to speak. You know, for me, it wasn't a fire, but it was the end of my career. I was only 23 years old, and you know, I was in my third season in the minor leagues, actually, with Kansas City. I had actually been drafted by the Yankees out of high school, but didn't sign with the Yankees. I went to Stanford and played baseball there, then got drafted by the Royals and was doing well in the Royals organization, a left-handed pitching prospect, working my way up to the big leagues. And I went out to pitch one night, and I blew out my arm. And just like that, my career was over.
Instantaneously, then.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't know exactly. I mean, I knew the season was over at that point. We weren't 100% sure it was going to be the end of my career, but within, you know, the next 8 months to a year, it became obvious after a bunch of surgeries I wasn't going to be able to come back and play. And as I look back on the whole experience, I realized I only had one regret, and it didn't have anything to do with any of the games I'd blown or bad pitches I'd thrown or any of that stuff. It was just that I didn't fully appreciate it while it was happening. I was too busy trying to make it and thinking that I wasn't good enough, and then all of a sudden it was sort of taken away from me, and then I really did appreciate it, but a little bit too late.
Are there... Or is this a common occurrence, actually, in professional sports?
Oh, very often in sports. I mean, it's so competitive, and it's so easy to get injured as a pitcher, of course, or lots of other positions, whether it's baseball or other sports. And I talk to a lot of former athletes who will say, even guys that have played and had lots of success, say, you know, I was so involved in it at the time, I didn't really enjoy it. And then after it was over, I had some perspective. And I think this is a life, you know, phenomenon. And as I travel around the country, speaking to corporate groups and school groups and church groups, telling my story, but talking about the importance of appreciation, so many people can relate to this, whether they've been an athlete or not, is that we get caught up in our lives and we don't often realize how great they are until something is taken away from us.
Having the ability to appreciate where you are and what you have at the moment, even though you may not have everything you want or that you're anywhere that you want to be, you can still find something and some things to appreciate, and it's such a healing power.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think people are waking up to this, you know, as I speak on radio shows and TV shows or, you know, to different groups. And I mean, I'm sure you guys know this in the work that you do. It's like now it's not only this kind of out there notion of positive thinking. It's a day-to-day practice for a lot of us. It has physiological impact. It definitely has impact in our relationships. I do a lot of work in the business world and in the corporate world. People are really starting to understand we got to bring a little more gratitude and appreciation into our daily work if we're going to be effective and ultimately be fulfilled in what we do.
You know, I know that some people are going to criticize the whole focus on the positive thing, the secret, you know,
affirmations.
Let's just do the good stuff. I mean, do you think that it's having a negative effect or a positive effect on society?
Well, I mean, obviously I'm a little biased, but I think it has a very positive effect. I mean, people are always going to push back on things, and we should. We should have open discussion and dialogue. And I say all the time, look, this is not about avoiding the reality of life.
You know, there you go.
I consider myself an optimist, but at the same time a realist. And I just think, and I don't know about you guys, but I know for me personally and for so many people I work with that I have a tendency to focus way more on the negative stuff than the positive stuff if I'm not paying attention. It's just, you know, 100 things could go right and one thing could go wrong, and many of us have a tendency to focus on that. So my big passion is, let's just balance it out a little bit. You know, and I'll give you an example. I was down in Houston in April, actually. I just got done speaking for a group at Chevron, and I got in the cab, and I was driving to the airport. It was actually the day, another really sort of tragic day with something going on in the country. It was the day of the Virginia Tech shooting.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
so I was feeling very emotional, and I start talking to the cab driver, and he and I both are talking about what's going on, and he tells me that he's from Ethiopia originally. So I, you know, we start having this really interesting conversation. I say to him, what's your take on this culture, given that, you know, you didn't grow up here? And he paused for a second, and he said, well, can I be honest with you? And I said, please. He said, well, I think that a lot of people in this culture act like spoiled brats.
Oh.
And I said, really? He said, look, Mike, I'm from Ethiopia. Every day here is a good day. And it was such a great perspective because, you know, without diminishing any of the challenges that we all face, and some of them are serious, I mean, most of us, especially in this culture, have so many blessings and so many things to be grateful for. The question is, are we paying attention to them?
Sure. There's a lot of people in America who just say America is the greatest country, but they don't explain why. And
right.
when you hear that outside perspective, well, there's a lot of darn good reasons why we're one of the greatest countries. We've got so much opportunity and so much availability to be happy.
That's, you know, but for many people, I think it's really hard to focus on that, especially when they're dealing with some kind of adversity. Mm-hmm. Mike, when you first injured your arm and you knew you weren't going to play baseball again, I mean, didn't you go through a really dark period?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I struggled with some, depression. I struggled with a lot of negative stuff. I mean, both with that experience and some other experiences in my life. And it was really, you know, so I went through a very dark period, as a lot of people do. As part of that's natural, you know, the ebbs and flows of life. I think what I found now in my own personal life, you know, now 10 years later, after, you know, recovering physically to the degree that I could, obviously not to play baseball again, but to lead a normal life, and also mentally and emotionally, is I think it's really important that we practice gratitude and appreciation on a regular basis, because it's when things go wrong, so to speak, or when we get that errant phone call or have that physical thing happen or that difficulty in our lives, that really being able to focus on the good stuff. Again, not avoid the pain or pretend like everything's fine in some unrealistic way. So some of my own struggles actually were what led me to really start to practice and understand the deeper meaning, so to speak, of appreciation and gratitude in my own life. And a lot of that, when I speak and in my book, I share that very openly and honestly, because I think it's part of life. And the more I think we can practice and learn how to integrate this into our daily lives, the easier it becomes.
You know, you talked about gratitude. Thanksgiving is almost around the corner.
My favorite holiday.
You like that one?
I do, yeah. Not only the food, but the opportunity to be grateful and to even be grateful in front of my family out loud.
Yes.
And voice it out loud. It's like you can now say things at the dinner table that you might not necessarily say otherwise.
You know, I wonder how many people actually do that. I know that, I mean, we do it, and it's something that I've experienced, but I wonder, I don't remember it growing up. I don't remember saying, okay, it's Thanksgiving, let's talk about something we're grateful for.
Yeah.
But, you know, just in life, when you're dealing, again, with something adverse, it's kind of tough to focus on the good stuff, but I think you need to force yourself.
Sometimes, I mean, I think you're right, and I think part of it, and I talk about this, I mean, the whole first third of Focus on the Good Stuff in the book, I talk about a lot of why we get so obsessed with negativity, and one of the reasons I believe is because we actually don't often honestly deal with our sort of deep, dark emotions, if you will, you know, the ones that the sadness, the anger, the rage, the jealousy, the bad ones, you know, the shame, the ones we don't like to talk about, and I think when we deal with those effectively with other people that we know and trust or people that are professionals or really go through some of that, what happens on the other side is that we can actually be more authentically positive and grateful. Sometimes when we're in a really tough spot and we're trying to pretend to be positive on top of it, it doesn't really work. So it's a little bit, it almost sounds a little bit like, you know, I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, but I think we can practice it, but we got to do it authentically. And the piece about Thanksgiving that you guys were talking about, I love that. We do that at our house too. You know, everyone holds hands and we go around the table and we talk about what we're grateful for, but we try to do that all the time, not just on Thanksgiving, because, I mean, I think it is a great opportunity to do it, but it's so funny in our culture. We, like, need an excuse. Well, oh, it's Thanksgiving, or oh, it's your birthday, or oh, someone retired, let's tell them how great they are. But why don't we do that on, you know, April 12th?
Every day of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Listen, I think that you talk about in your book about making a gratitude list, and one of the techniques that I've used with clients over the years has been to do a gratitude journal, a very simple exercise where every night you write 3 to 5 things that you're grateful for.
Yeah.
It helps put your mind in focus.
Well, within 2 weeks, if you do that on a regular basis, you will notice a shift in your mood. If you're not feeling good about your life, you do that for 2 weeks, you will notice a difference.
Oh, absolutely. And I, you know, similarly work with a lot of my clients one-on-one with that. You know, I had a guy a couple years ago who I was working with, and it was funny because I take it even a step further sometimes in my workshops and seminars to specifically challenge people to focus on what they appreciate about themselves. So not about their dog or the cat or their friend or their house, but like specifically about qualities within them, which for a lot of people is even harder to do, but similarly could be as powerful or more so. And this guy, Jim, who I was working with, he was struggling with a bunch of things and wasn't finding work that he really was into. He was kind of a freelance guy and an artist and wasn't finding women that he was into. You know, was kind of having a tough time on a lot of fronts. And I challenged him every day, 5 new things he appreciated about himself. And he thought it was crazy at first and didn't want to do it and thought it was really self-absorbed and all this resistance. Finally, he started doing it. And after about a week or two, he did start to see a shift. And by the end of the month, he'd really gotten into it, and he was doing it every day. And all of a sudden, he's like, I don't know what's happening, but all of a sudden, women seem to be more interested in me. Mm-hmm. I'm getting more work. I mean, all these things were happening in his life. And I told him, hey, man, it's not unrelated to this self-appreciation practice. And he kept doing it for a long time and really integrated it into his daily practice.
Now, I think a lot of people are going to think that that's self-absorbed and self-centered. But the truth is, it's a healing practice.
Oh, absolutely. And the big distinction, I think, as it relates to, I'm really passionate about self-appreciation. There's a big difference between self-appreciation and arrogance. And here's the difference.
Or narcissism.
Yeah, narcissism. Because self-appreciation is a genuine sense of love for yourself or confidence in yourself, like that deep place within you.
Genuine.
You may not even have to tell anyone else about it. I mean, you may choose to do that. But it's very different where narcissism and being self-absorbed and arrogant, which I catch myself from time to time being in that place. You know, I think we all do. When I'm feeling that way or saying anything that comes from that arrogant, narcissistic place, it's only because I'm scared, like I'm trying to impress somebody. And I think if we can start to feel that distinction within ourselves and catch ourselves one way or the other, we can really start to develop that beautiful and so important, you know, skill, if you will, of appreciating ourselves.
You know, you make a distinction between appreciation and self-aggrandizement and arrogance, and I think that was a really good one. But there are people who are going to have difficulty. You say appreciation is, you know, finding that place in yourself where you deeply love who you are. I think there are people who are going to have difficulty with that.
Yeah.
I think if you can just get to the point where you just appreciate, just like or acknowledge that this part of you is a good thing, and let the love develop after a little while. You know, I think. I think for some it's going to take a little while longer.
You're right. I mean, we got to take people wherever they are, and each one of us, you know, depending on where we are in our own process. You know, one of the things, there's a couple simple practices that people can do related to self-appreciation. The first one, and this sounds silly to even talk to people about this sometimes, but I talk about it all the time, which is when someone compliments you, just say thank you and let it in.
Really hard.
It sounds simple, but...
but, I mean, isn't that funny? You know, people either do, they either do the phony compliment back that they don't really mean, or even worse, they'll do the argue and, you know,
oh, no, I'm not. No, not really. No.
Yeah. And the way to think about it is, like, here's the metaphor. It's like a birthday gift, right? If I gave either of you guys a birthday present, it would be very odd if you gave me a present back if it's not my birthday. And it would be even worse if you smashed the present on the floor and said, I don't deserve that. What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But that's what we do with compliments. And the thing is, when we start to become better at taking compliments, even as awkward as it may feel, it actually is a really good self-appreciation practice, because what you're doing is you're allowing another person to acknowledge and appreciate you. And in the process, even if you feel a little awkward with it, you'll start to be able to appreciate yourself more.
And it's just as simple as receiving it intellectually and saying thank you.
Yeah. Even if that little voice in your head that I call and focus on the good stuff, the gremlin, you know, we all have that little critic or whatever we want to call it. Even if that voice argues with what they're saying, a lot of times, I know for me, when I'm being critical of myself, I'd much rather hang out in someone else's positive opinion of me than my own negative one at the time. So it actually is a lot better if I can just listen to what they have to say.
Yeah.
Well, and listening is good. Taking it in is a little bit harder. You know, I know that people can sit in a room and a dozen people can rattle off compliments about them and they won't remember any of them. So what do you suggest
for
someone?
One negative comment they'll remember forever.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You know, it's Dennis Prager's missing tile syndrome. You only see the one acoustic tile in the ceiling that's not there. Mm-hmm. You know, but what do you do? How do you train yourself to take in a compliment if that's not something you do very well?
Well, I think part of it is just to become aware of it. I mean, if you can first notice, we all have our own funny reactions. So when you start to notice them, you can start to make some choices differently if you want to. I mean, what I say to people, I actually just wrote an article recently, literally called How to Receive Compliments. But the first thing is to just stop and breathe when someone gives you a compliment so that you pause for a moment to actually hear what's being said. The second thing is if you can start to practice and train yourself just to say thanks. And then the third thing that I say to people all the time, and it sounds like a joke, but I'm serious, is just literally shut your mouth, because whatever comes after the thank you will almost always be weird and insincere. And if you can start to just notice that a little bit, and mostly what you'll do at first is catch yourself doing some version of blowing it off or not accepting it. But like anything, the more you pay attention to it, the easier it gets. So it really is a practice. And another thing that's good to do, if you're someone who becomes a little bit better at receiving compliments, and I do this all the time because it's part of my work, but when people don't accept my compliments, I don't, you know, get in their face or challenge them in some disrespectful way, but I will often say, hold on, all you have to do is say thanks. I really meant what I said. And I've had people call me and email me or come up to me years later and say, you know, when you said that to me, it really rattled my cage and it really, you know, sunk in. And just doing that, we start to sort of teach other people, and in the process we continue to learn.
I think you have to kind of take someone by the shoulders and shake them and go, just, you know, take this in, listen.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a whip, a chair, and a large bore handgun to get someone to pay attention to something like that.
Well, I guess it all depends on your approach. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, sometimes we do have to smack people upside the head with a little bit of love just so they can get their attention, you know.
And people are so used to, especially as kids, it was drilled into our heads to be humble in some way, that it actually takes courage to thrive. It takes courage to flourish and to lead a life that's well worth living. I think it really takes courage, and you want to challenge people to accept the compliments and to think in positive terms and to therefore radiate it and spread it out back into the world.
Well, absolutely. It takes a lot of courage. And, you know, there's the great quote from Marianne Williamson that often gets misattributed to Nelson Mandela that I put in my book and is now in pop culture all over the place, which is, you know, it's that whole notion of, you know, you playing small doesn't serve the world. There's nothing enlightened about you shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you.
Yes.
And the thing we got to remember, again, as long as we're not in an arrogant way in people's face with our success or doing it in some insecure kind of way, like, hey, look how great I am, which, again, we all do from time to time. If it's a genuine sense of this is who I am, this is what I'm proud of, we're actually doing ourselves and other people a great service to own that, if you will, because what it does is it raises the bar for other people. And I know as an athlete, when I was around other confident and successful athletes, even though it was intimidating to me, it made me play better. I had to raise my own bar to kind of keep up with those guys, if you will. And if I didn't, I just couldn't play, you know? And I think in life, if we could do that with a little more love and kindness to ourselves and other people, instead of sort of always worrying about, oh, I don't want to offend so-and-so, or I don't want to, you know, say this. I mean, there's times in life when we're proud of something, we've accomplished something, we don't want to say anything about it because we don't want to make other people feel bad.
Sure. Hey, let's go back to some of those sports figures there, Tiger Woods and A-Rod and some of the others. I mean, what sets these guys apart, and how do they, maybe not all of them do, but how do they keep from getting a big head? They accept a compliment. They know they have talent.
Yeah.
But how do they rise to the level that they're at, aside from raw talent? But you know, other athletes don't sometimes.
I mean, you're right. It's a really interesting phenomenon. You know, I actually had the privilege of playing with Alex Rodriguez. We were still in high school at the time. We played for Team USA in summer of 1992. He was my roommate. And then Tiger Woods, who I don't know all that well personally, lived in the same apartment complex I lived in at Stanford my senior year. So, you know, I got to see two of the most extraordinary athletes of our time sort of up close. And Alex specifically, we played together for about a month there. And you know, it's hard to say. I mean, granted, he was a lot younger and Tiger was as well. But the thing I can say about both of those guys in my limited experience with them, there was just something about the way they carried themselves that was different than the other guys.
Confident?
Yeah, and it was this, it was focused. I mean, if you saw Tiger Woods walking around campus in at Stanford in the mid-90s, I mean, the guy was on a mission. If he was just going to class or going to get a sandwich or I don't know what he was doing, but it was like he was going somewhere.
I've seen him at Sherwood Country Club at his charity event, and I watched him walk past 10 or 15 feet from the crowd where I was, and he can't hear one thing the crowd is saying, or at least he appears not to. He's so hyper-focused on his mission.
Does that mean he's not taking in compliments?
You know, it's interesting.
Maybe
some of those guys outwardly are very critical of themselves, which I always find to be an interesting phenomenon, especially given my own work. But I think when you get to that level, it's tough sometimes. We can learn from those guys in a really positive way. But the thing to remember, again, without diminishing any of our abilities, is the Tiger Woodses and the Alex Rodriguezes of the world are really extraordinary athletes. I mean, their talent is so, you know, phenomenal. And the level at which they're playing, I think, it does put them in somewhat of a league of their own. But I think the other thing, Alex Rodriguez being a great example, and I say this with so much respect for him, I actually think he's the best player in the major leagues right now. I get very angry at how the media in New York and how a lot of fans treat him because of this notion that he hasn't played well in the big games, which, you know, the numbers show that he hasn't. But I use that as an example when I'm talking to athletes especially, that the mental aspect of sports and of success are so important, because you take someone like Alex Rodriguez, who's probably the most talented guy in the major leagues, one of the most talented players of all time, and there are times, especially last year towards the end of the season and in the postseason, he was miserable on the field, both you could tell mentally and emotionally, but also his results were awful because he was so in his own head, he wasn't able to focus and get it done.
I don't know how I would handle that much daily pressure.
Oh, I mean, you know, when you're making $25 million a year and everybody expects you to be the greatest guy, and when you make a mistake, it's on the front page of the paper, and you know, I don't think most of us could relate to that, and very few people feel sorry for him because of all the money that he makes, but human being to human being, and not just because I know him, I actually have a lot of compassion for him.
You know, it's very tough when you're in the front page every day. It's very tough when people are talking about you behind your back, and even if you're not on the front page, people talk about us when we're at our office, and we know stuff's going on.
Sure.
That's a very interesting thing for people to handle, to appreciate their own lives, even though they're not on the front page or making $25 million a year.
Didn't Mother Teresa say that if you're not making enemies, you're doing something wrong?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. Did she?
Yeah,
she did.
Because she was out there helping so many people in so many different ways, she annoyed some people with her demands.
Well, and I think it's an interesting, there's a slippery slope as we talk about appreciation, especially as it relates to appreciating others, both us acknowledging others and wanting the acknowledgement of other people, because we do live in a culture that we get all caught up in what's our perception of other people, whether we're a public person or just in our regular lives. And I think there's value to it. And of course, there's impact, people's opinions of us one way or the other. But the challenge is to live our lives and be true to ourselves. As Oscar Wilde said, and I love this quote, you know, be yourself, everyone else is already taken. Right?
Yeah. It's a great quote, and it's a great story. Be who you are, and I guess you would add, appreciate who you are.
Yeah.
You know, even though you're not absolutely perfect, you are who you are, and you probably make the world a better place by being that way.
Absolutely, and you know what's interesting? I was just thinking about this the other day, because it's been a little over a year.
Hang on to that, Mike, because we got to take a short break, but stay with us. We're going to be right back, and we're going to take calls from our listeners.
Oh, great.
So hold on. This is the Emotional Fitness Edition of KCLU's Crosstalk. We'll be back in just one moment.
You're listening to Crosstalk, where Santa Barbara and Ventura counties come to discuss today's big issues. The number to call is 805-493-9200. 493-9200.
Dr. Barton Goldsmith, along with Dr. Stephen Trudeau, and we are talking to Mike Robbins, author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation.
Welcome back, Mike.
Hello. Mike,
hey.
Are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, great. Stephen, you had a question?
Well, you know, many kids have this attitude, and I guess we call it taking it for granted.
Yeah.
And I work with teenagers a lot. I'd say about 65-70% of my practice is adolescents. And there's a prevailing attitude and a shift that needs to take place. But their attitude is, well, why shouldn't I be famous by the time I'm 18? Why shouldn't I be a millionaire by the time I'm 21?
Yeah.
You know, why shouldn't I be able to have a brand new BMW or whatever form of transportation suits them? There's a lot of entitlement.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a challenge. I mean, you know, because you work with a lot of adolescents. And I think, you know, my opinion, I'm curious on what you guys think about this too, but is, you know, I think our culture has really you know, put the celebrity on a pedestal and put fame and fortune as the ultimate goal. When, you know, I think we as individuals, you know, I'm a new parent myself. We have a 20-month-old. And
congratulations.
You know, so oh, thank you. Yeah, we've got a
welcome to the land of no sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've been dealing with that a little bit. You know, new one and book tour combined. It's always interesting at our house. But, you know, I mean, we've got a few years before. Our daughter's obviously a teenager, and my wife and I have done some work with teens over the years. And I think, again, it's individual by individual. It's also modeling that and really looking at what is important in our culture, and are we focused more on the material success and the money and the fame?
I think you hit it right there. You said modeling.
Yeah.
That's one of the key words, because a parent who models or behaves in a certain way is going to get the respect, or the kid is going to listen to the message of the behavior far more than the message of the words.
Exactly, and so they're going to pay attention on two fronts. I mean, when we talk about success and this entitlement attitude, I think there's actually can potentially be a positive side to entitlement if it's done with a certain amount of consciousness or awareness. Like, the expectation of success, to me, is almost always coupled with success. Like, we were talking before the break about Tiger Woods and Alex Rodriguez. Those guys go out expecting to succeed. And from a certain perspective, you could call that entitlement. They just expect it, right? Now, we could also say, well, they've worked really hard and they've got a lot of talent. So
preparation and perspiration.
Exactly. So those things involve. But the entitlement to think that it's just going to walk up and someone's going to knock on the door and hand you your dream job or $1 million without you putting in any work, I mean, that's where it becomes problematic. But I also think the message that is important for us to be teaching young people and modeling ourselves is, what's more important, success or fulfillment? And a lot of times, and I catch myself with this all the time, and I got to practice, it's like we're going after the success, forgetting that what's the ultimate goal is to be fulfilled. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, obviously I'm biased given that I've written a book called Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. I think what we're after is appreciating ourselves and appreciating our lives. And we all know there's a lot of people, and many of us have had this experience where we've, you know, attracted or created very specific success and didn't feel very good about it in the process.
Well, and it's how you measure success. My father never made $1 million, but he's still married to his first wife in nearly 45 years.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
Mike, can you suggest some simple, basic things a person can do on a daily basis to feel better about their life, to appreciate their lives and themselves more?
Absolutely. I mean, one of them we talked about before the break, which is the gratitude journal, or just writing things down that you're grateful for. Another thing related to that is literally talking about it or asking people. You know, one simple thing you can do, that if you call my office or my cell phone on my voicemail, it says, hi, this is Mike. You know, sorry I missed your call. Leave a message. And in your message, let me know something you're grateful for.
Hmm.
So by talking about it and asking other people, that's another thing, because then we get into conversations that are about gratitude as opposed to complaining.
Are you talking about taking gratitude out of the closet?
Yeah, exactly. Let's put it out the front, you know, right in the middle. Because the other piece of this, and I talk to people all the time of creating, this is with my corporate groups and also in families, gossip-free zones or going on complaint fasts, where we really practice. Like
going on a complaint fast, that is an excellent suggestion.
Yeah,
could I
go an hour? Could I go the whole day? And then, you know, the more you practice, the easier it gets. And when you start to do it, by the way, anyone listening, you start to do this, it is not easy. You will catch yourself. But those things are all simple things that people can do. You know, another thing with your spouse, if you happen to be in a relationship, is pick things, like three things every day, new things that you appreciate about your spouse, and let them know before you go to bed.
Yeah, three is going to be challenging. Okay, I think that if you go on a daily hunt to find one thing to appreciate about your spouse or one thing to make them smile, that's a lot.
Okay.
Otherwise, when you get down to three, you might be saying, gee, I really appreciate the way you breathe that in and out and in and out. You do that so well.
But, you know, no, I think three is great, but I think after a while you do start to run out. You have to work.
And you don't want to diminish the power of that, in essence, a compliment.
Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised, and I appreciate you guys saying that and both, you know, being honest. Again, it's got to fit for everybody. This is not a one-size-fits-all, but here's the thing about it. The more you look for it, the more you'll find it in your spouse and in people. So just be careful about limiting. You're right. You don't want to set yourself up for failure. But when you start to do it, you'll find all kinds of things if you're paying attention. And the reality is there is this notion, and I know you just said it, about you don't want to diminish it or devalue it. Yeah, you don't want to overdo it so it becomes phony. But if we're doing it genuinely from our heart, there's literally an infinite number of things to appreciate about people, about life, and about ourselves. We're just not that used to it, so at first blush it seems like, oh, that would be insane.
But so it's about sincerity then.
Absolutely. I mean, genuineness, really, it's got, compliments need to be genuine, specific, and personal for them to really have impact.
Genuine, specific, and personal.
I'm writing that down as fast as I can.
You know, what do you say to somebody who is looking in the mirror and, you know, not that all of us are, but some of us are getting older on a daily basis.
Yeah. I'm not.
You know, yeah, I knew that part. And we look in the mirror and we start to see, you know, crinkles where there weren't crinkles before.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you've added a pound or two, or you're just not, I'm sure you're not in the same shape you were when you were playing professional ball.
No, not at all.
You know, I mean, what do you say to yourself as you mature, shall we say, about
I think it's a good question. It's an important one, and this is an issue that men deal with as well as women. It seems to be just mostly considered a female issue, but here we are, three men talking about this, and this is all relevant.
That's why I want to do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I remember talking to my aunt a couple years ago about this, and she said a funny thing. We were looking at some old photos, and the photos we were looking at were about 25 years old, and she looked at this one photo of herself, and she said, "You know what's sad about this photo?" And I said, "What?" She said, "I thought I was fat back then."
Oh.
Right? And, you know, and she's saying, "I look so great looking at it now. I was so thin. I was so young." And, you know, and what she was basically saying was, "I wish I had appreciated it then."
Yeah.
And I think most of us, whether we're 40 or 50 or 70 or 25, you know, there's an aspect of it's really up to us to appreciate it, and it's not really about the physical reality of it. So that goes back to some of this practice is, what do we focus on when we look in the mirror? If we focus on that wrinkle, or we focus on those extra 5 pounds, where does that lead us?
I don't know. I'd rather focus on the twinkle in the eye.
There you go.
Well, and that's great that you can do that. But, you know, a lot of people just can't bring themselves to that.
Yeah.
A lot. So, again, Mike, one simple task that the average person can do while looking in the mirror to make themselves feel better about themselves.
Well, there's two things about the mirror. And I personally, just so you guys know, I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges for me, too, because from the time I was really little with the braces and the acne and the whole bit as a teenager, I've always had a lot of challenges with my own physical appearance, and not because I'm some, you know, crazy, weird-looking person, but that's been a challenge. And the two things that I've personally practiced and ask people to practice all the time is affirmations in the mirror, genuine ones, like talk to yourself. Look yourself in the eye, and with no one listening, no one looking, just what do you appreciate about yourself, and reminding yourself of those things. And the second thing is, to when you look in the mirror or look at a photo, you're immediately going to be drawn to those certain areas of your face or your body that you may not necessarily like, or you're noticing are, you know, older or different than they used to be. See if you can actually practice looking for the things that you do like. Oh, wow, I really like my smile. Oh, wow, I really like the color of my eyes. I mean, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And what it can do is, as you practice that more often, you will start to notice those things more than the areas you think are flaws or blemishes.
And I think one of the things that we forget is that when we look at ourselves in the mirror or in a photograph, that's a static picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and we're focusing on the flaws. We don't see us fluid and moving, which we are all of the time.
Yeah.
If our listeners, any of our listeners, have a question for Mike Robbins, author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation, you can call us now. The lines are open at 805-493-9200, and your publisher has sent us a few copies of the book, so if we put the callers on the air, we can send them a copy of this really cool book.
Don't sell yourself short. I'm looking at your picture here in the desk cover, and you're a handsome guy.
Well, thank you.
Ah, there we go. Yeah. That's how you do it.
That was good. That was good. Okay, so now we're waiting for calls for people to compliment us about, you know, the course they can't see us, can they?
Mike, how is focusing on the good stuff different from the Monty Python song, Always Look on the Bright Side of Life?
Well, that's a great song. I'm glad you brought that up. My hope is that, or my idea is that, it, you know, we take it a little bit deeper in the sense that, you know, I mean, it really is. It's about practices. It's about integrating things into our daily lives. I mean, one of the reasons that I wrote Focus on the Good Stuff, you know, I've been speaking for 7 years to all different kinds of groups, and people continue to ask me to write some things down and to create more of a workbook, a manual that people could follow, because I think, especially nowadays with the work, like the work you guys are doing, all the great positive psychology that's out there that people mm-hmm. are now understanding, I think people are understanding the phenomenon of gratitude and of focusing on the good stuff more so than maybe in the past with movies like The Secret and such that we talked about a little bit earlier. I think the challenge is a lot of us don't know exactly how to put this into practice in our lives.
Yeah, it's so, not taught in your typical elementary school.
Exactly. I mean, we learn all kinds of stuff. We don't learn this, and I think some of this stuff is fundamental to having great relationships, to feeling good about ourselves, to creating success. And so the reason I wrote the book the way that I did is there's practices at the end of every chapter. Like, not that people have to do them all, but here are things you can pick. We've been talking about some of them, but pick these things, start to integrate them into your life, into your relationships, and see what happens.
And they're easy to integrate.
Absolutely.
You know, you talk your last chapter, it's not what we know, but what we do that matters.
Yeah.
And enlighten our listeners about the difference between that.
Well, you know, one of my favorite quotes is, insight without action makes no difference. So it's about putting things into practice. It's about actually doing something. You know, I'll be driving in my car, and all of a sudden I'll have a great idea of a book I could write, or a thing I could do, or some way that I could fix something around the house. And unless I actually do it, I forget about it and it never happens.
Mm.
So it's really about, you know, simple stuff. As one of my friends, Susan, calls this, and she's a great teacher, is micro-movements. It's actually putting little things into practice, into your life, and making those small steps for growth. And a lot of times, we try to do with our New Year's resolutions or something really big stuff, and then we fail within a week or two, and then we completely give up.
Yeah, that's the problem with New Year's resolutions. Health clubs love it, but...
Yeah, exactly. But go to the health club at about, you know, January 20th, and nobody's there, right?
Yeah.
It only takes 3 weeks. Mike, I'm noticing that a lot of the motivational speakers out there are baby boomers.
Mm-hmm.
And what's up with that? I mean, is there just a...
Because there's more of us.
That's it? It's just you're saturating the market? Or
yeah. Well, I mean, think about it, right? You know, right now, baby boom generation, roughly people are about age 42 to about age 61, right? So, and there's a lot more boomers than there are Gen Xers, and I happen to be in Generation X. So that's one thing. People tend to get into more of, you know, emotional development, if you will, or, you know, questioning life in a way when they move into their 40s, into their 50s, maybe into their late 30s. And so some of it is just an age factor of where we are specifically. But I also think that my generation, Generation X, is still has been sort of figuring itself out in terms of who are we, what's our identity, and as we're moving into more positions of power in the business world and other places, you know, what do we have to say? And I think a lot has changed, and I think over the next 5-10 years you're going to see a lot change. My hope is in my own work and some of my contemporaries who are in my same age range, if you will, that we're bringing a different perspective, if you will. Not better, not worse, just different. And I think that it's important because, you know, I think we're seeing a lot, and I see this a lot in the business work that I do, as just these kids. You know, we were sort of the dot-comers, skateboard riding, MTV watching, don't have a clue about what's going on in the world. And, you know, we've gotten a little bit more mature. And the two most important aspects, I think, of the Generation X and then the younger generation, Generation Y culture that I see when I'm out traveling around the country are appreciation is fundamental and authenticity is the other piece.
Hmm.
How do you think that we can take appreciation for ourselves and our lives and use it to make the world a better place?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, I think fundamentally that a lot of the issues and challenges that we see just in our culture here in America and around the world stem from us not really loving or valuing ourselves. Because, you know, I tend to believe, and I don't know what you guys think about this exactly, but the world is a reflection of sort of our internal world, if you will. So the more that we do heal ourselves, love ourselves, appreciate ourselves inside, the easier our relationships become, the less conflict we have. And then on a community level, on a national level, and ultimately on a global level, as individuals are interacting with each other from that place of, again, not perfect, not I never have a worry or concern or doubt, but, you know, I genuinely value and appreciate who I am, I think the way we interact with each other and the way we relate would fundamentally alter.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. When someone is struggling with self-identity, with trying to figure out who they want to be when they grow up, regardless of what age they are and what they want to do in the world, what do you suggest to them?
Well, a couple things. I mean, the first thing I usually suggest when people, you know, I do a lot of coaching, one-on-one coaching with people who are exactly in that position. And the first thing that I try to remind them is almost everybody feels that way at some level. And if they don't, they did. So they're not alone because people somehow erroneously think they shouldn't feel that way. Which I think is the problem to begin with, right?
Yeah, it's part of the process of getting to the next level.
Exactly, sure. And it's good, you know. It's a good thing to not know and to be sort of unsure at times in life. The second thing that I often will talk to people about, and I ask myself this question, is where do I feel most alive? Where do I feel most in sort of flow, if you will, or we used to call it in sports kind of in the zone. It's sort of noticing places in your life where you don't feel like it's a lot of work.
Feel like it's a lot of work, exactly.
Yeah. And so that's something. And then the third thing is to look at people that they really respect and admire, and not so much about the results of those people, although that could be part of it, but who do you really respect and admire, who feels good to be around, and then asking yourself the question of why is that about that other person? Because we're always going to be ourselves. We can't be them, but we can learn from other people who seem happy, who seem really engaged and inspired in life. And there's a lot of things that people can teach us just by the way they operate.
Sure. I mean, a mentor is one of the most powerful figures in any person's life.
Absolutely.
You know, when I'm working with teenagers, I encourage them as an exercise to not only identify people that they're already might consider a mentor, but to seek out new mentors.
Yeah.
And that would be everything from people who are alive and near them to historical figures who might not still be around, but their legacy lives on, to even sports figures. I mean, some of these sports figures, not all of them, have a tremendous ability to impart this positive energy by the way they live their lives.
Yep. Absolutely. And I think it's important. That's a big question. You know, I get asked a lot about athletes in the culture, and we have a tendency, of course, we focus on often the problematic ones are the ones that make headlines for doing illegal things. And
Unfortunately,
and there's so many great athletes, there's so many great people. And the fundamental thing about it, though, that I say a lot, and I believe this, is it's important to find people in our lives that we can identify with. And even if it is a historical figure or a famous person.
A coach, a teacher.
Yeah, but someone on a daily basis that you know, we can really learn from and talk to and ask questions of, because that's a lot where the learning really takes place.
You know, you talked about someone finding the place in life where they're the most comfortable, where you use the term the zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what if someone's zone is sitting on the couch watching daytime TV?
I am very comfortable right there.
You know, I think we really need to, like, look at the difference between what is comfortable and what is just escapist.
Well, teenagers would say that, you know, sitting in front of the computer playing World of Warcraft for 17 hours straight is the zone.
Right. Well, and I think the challenge becomes, you know, it's understandable, especially when we're talking about young people, to have some opinions that we're going to share with them. One of the things we got to look out for, you know, myself included, is that we can get very self-righteous and arrogant about our opinions about what other people should and shouldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, you know, yeah, people can be comfortable sitting on the couch or playing video games or other things that we might feel aren't really beneficial to their well-being, so to speak. The deeper question, I think, to ask is, you know, where do you feel comfortable, but where do you feel alive? Where do you feel passionate and inspired, so to speak? Because I find some of the stuff that brings me most joy and I'm most inspired by also scares the bejesus out of me.
Mm.
You know, I love speaking publicly. I love being on radio programs like this or other things, but I get nervous not because I don't like it, but because it matters. So I often ask people, where do you find that you're nervous in a way that's exciting? Because that's when you know you're really kind of living on your edge. And for me personally, like when I left baseball and got into the business world and a couple of years of sales, and it was the dot-com thing, and it was interesting. But, man, for me it was so boring because I didn't get nervous doing hardly anything I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I needed to find something that was going to make my heart beat really fast.
Ratchet it up a few notches.
Yeah,
there.
Because that's, to me, a sign for myself personally, a lot of people I work with, that's when it matters. And even when we talk about appreciation, you know, look, people say to me all the time, well, I get nervous or uncomfortable and I don't know what to say. And I say, look, if your heart starts to beat, your face turns a little red, that's a good thing. That means you care. That means it's an intimate, vulnerable moment where you're telling another person why they matter to you. It's never going to stop making you nervous. So don't ever think that it will. And it's a good sign to let you know you're doing it authentically. Because I do this for a living. Anytime I'm doing it personally with someone that I love and care about or doing it in front of a group as an example, I get nervous too.
And you act in an authentic way.
Yeah, because it's just, I'm alive, you know, and I say to people all the time, sort of jokingly but seriously, don't worry about your fear. You're always going to have it until you don't, and the only point you won't is when you die.
Mm.
You'll be dead.
And you won't be afraid then.
Exactly.
But the thing I think that's interesting to note about the difference between anxiety and excitement,
mm-hmm.
they feel exactly the same physiologically.
The body can't tell the difference.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So is this exciting or is it scary?
It's all in the reframe.
And we're all scared, I think, every single day about a lot of different things.
Yep.
And we have to make choices. and it can be exciting figuring out how you're going to budget yourself for the month and pay off all of your bills. And it can also be exciting figuring out how to speak to an audience of a couple of thousand people.
Exactly. And I think you're so right about, I mean, as you know, as doctors, physiologically, it's the same thing. And so the question then becomes, what's that voice in our head, or what's that story in our head? What are we saying to ourselves about whatever we're doing? I was just down in Arizona a couple weeks ago speaking to the Arizona Diamondbacks minor leaguers at their instructional league. And I love talking to athletes because of my background, and I don't get as much of an opportunity to do it as I would like. But one of the things I said to them, and I say to most athletes, is like, look, there is nothing wrong with being nervous. Everybody gets nervous. And as athletes, especially male athletes, with this whole notion of being macho and tough and you're not supposed to get scared and all that mm-hmm. stuff, these guys are walking around completely terrified, pretending that they're not, and carrying so much pressure that every time when I get down, and it happened a couple weeks ago when I was in Arizona, at least a half dozen, if not more, guys will come up to me after, and they'll kind of look around, make sure no one's watching, and they'll say, hey, thanks, man. I feel like that all the time, and no one's ever told me it's okay. You know?
A little validation never hurts, yeah.
All right. You know, I've never had a professional baseball player that I could ask this question of, is there crying in baseball?
Well, I tell you what, there was for me. I cried a number of times. I didn't want to let anyone know, but of course
there is. There's no crying in baseball.
But I think it's important that people realize that no matter what level you get to, there are going to be things that are incredibly emotional.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, it's funny. I used to say this when I was younger, and it's true. One of my favorite days of the season always when I was a kid was the last day of the season. And usually it was a bummer because you almost always lost the last game, unless you won the championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the last day of the season, most of my life growing up, from the time I was 7 years old playing T-ball all the way through college and pro ball, guys would cry. And the reason that I liked it is because I was always one of the ones that would cry, but I loved seeing the other guys cry because the whole year I always thought I was just an emotional wreck. And that the rest of these guys seemed to all have it together. And when I'd see, you know, especially like the big tough kid on the team would break down and cry because we'd lose and we get eliminated from the playoffs, it always made me feel more normal, mm-hmm. more connected, like human being to human being.
Yeah.
And I think that that's another big piece of my book and of my work, is really kind of trying to break through this veneer that we all have, that everything's fine and we got it all together, when, you know what, we're all just doing the best we can and trying to work it out.
Yeah.
It's okay to be human.
Absolutely.
We're all in this together.
Yeah.
You know, I think you got the opportunity to have an incredible lesson, and not that it was your choice, but you changed your life and you made a success out of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, what can you say to people who are in the position that you were? Something happened and they've blown their arm out.
Out of their control.
Yeah. Yep. What can they do?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing to do is acknowledge themselves for putting themselves out there. Because it takes a lot of courage, and sometimes it's not about making it, it's just about having the courage to play, whatever it is. In my case, it was baseball, and a lot of other people's, it's other things. And the second thing is to really get some support that they need emotionally, because if they are dealing with a loss of any kind, you know, there's some work to do internally to work through that. And then the third thing is just to remember whatever it was that ended, they created it in the first place so they could create something else. And maybe it's not the exact same thing, but they've got that power within them because they were the ones that did that in the first place.
Do athletes have a perspective on this, because they know that they're not going to be an old man playing the game? They know that at some point, even when they're considered relatively young, that they will no longer be a top pick.
You know, some do. I think, honestly, most of them are in denial. It's kind of like how we are in our culture about death. Like, of course we know it exists and it happens all the time, but we sort of act like it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of athletes walk around knowing, of course, that's the reality. It could happen at any moment. They could get hurt or their career's going to end at some point. But most of them don't really talk about it, deal with it, or even address it until they have
to. I mean, 35, 40. I mean,
yeah.
This is Dr. Barton Goldsmith along with Dr. Stephen Trudeau, thanking you for listening to us today. We were talking with Mike Robbins, author of Focus on the Good Stuff, The Power of Appreciation. And how do people find you, Mike?
They go to focusonthegoodstuff.com. They can get some free chapters and check it all out.
It's a great book. I suggest that you get it. And please join us next week for the Emotional Fitness edition of KCLU's Crosstalk, here every Monday at 1 o'clock. And Dr. Stephen, how do people find you?
Easy to find. I'm at humansguide.com, humansguide.com.
And this is Barton Goldsmith. Please check out my column every Monday in the Ventura County Star Arts and Living section. And if you have a question, you can email me, Barton@KCLU.org. Take care of each other. We'll talk next week. Bye-bye for now.